Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Happy March 1st. There's a poem of Ryokan's that goes as follows. And signal if I'm not speaking loudly enough at some point. At any point. If I fade away, call me back, please. The poem of Ryokan. The rain has stopped. The clouds are gone. The sky is clear again. When your heart is pure, your whole world is pure. Abandon this fleeting world. Abandon yourself. Then the moon and the flowers will guide you along the way. The rain has stopped. The clouds are gone. The sky is clear again. When your heart is pure, your whole world is pure. Abandon this fleeting world. Abandon yourself. Then the moon and the flowers will guide you along the way. One of the risks of speaking in occasions like this is I might entertain the notion that what I have to say is of some importance. That somehow there's something more important happening when I'm speaking than what's happening when we are all practicing together. I have so many things I would love to say to all of you because we see each other, some of us, so infrequently. But I would be hard-pressed to say something more true than the sound of the crow this morning while sitting. So even though I have this, my role gives me this job to do, it's very important that I not lose simple sincerity and try to lose myself in the words that I speak. To give myself up completely in the words that I speak, which at the same time entails fully inhabiting each word that I speak. Logically, that sounds like a paradox, but in lived experience, that is so. To give up a body, Dogen says, and to receive a body are both giving. And so purity of heart, the word purity, the word pure sometimes sounds like a four-letter word. Unless I change the word so I can count the letters correctly. It carries some baggage. We hear the word pure, we think of impure. And we think, and then our mind is dualistic. I don't think that's what Ryokan is getting at. Suzuki Roshi, in the very beginning of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, says he's not interested in the history of Zen or the profundity of Zen teaching. He's interested in helping us keep our practice pure and our minds pure in its fundamental sense. But he emphasizes this does not mean to make some impure thing pure. It means things as it is, things as they actually are. A way of being with this that is sincere and direct, unassuming. So when I hear the word purity, I hear sincerity, humility, and selflessness. The word selflessness is also sometimes fraught with misconstrual. Like if we can realize no self, maybe then we can practice. And then we've set up some sort of gaining idea that, you know, we can achieve selflessness. And it's like that proverbial snake chasing its own tail. We're caught in a self-trap because we're pursuing selflessness. But it's so much more simple than that, I think. When Suzuki Roshi talks about it, and in our practice. So I'm back at Green Gulch, living at Green Gulch, and when I first came to Green Gulch, I had a meeting with, I think, the director about, maybe not when I first came, but when I was going on staff. I can't exactly remember the occasion, but I met with the director in the director's office. And on his wall was this poster of a growling bear. And underneath the growling bear was this caption, "Show me your realization." And that poster always kind of bugged me, you know. And it's still, you know, the notion of Zen histrionics. You know, it's one of my pet peeves, you know, people who are demonstrating their Zen. Somehow it seems to miss the point. Somehow it's like, you know, the proverbial pointing your cart north when you want to go south. You know, you're missing the point of selflessness. Missing the point of simple giving of yourself to the practice. And receiving on each moment your life. Because you've given your life, you receive your life. That's the paradox, you know. He who would save his life is going to lose it, but when you give your life unselfishly, you have everything. But then that's like, you know, well, later for that, maybe. So I wanted to share with you a case in the Book of Serenity that I have loved for a long, long time. I feel it's kind of unique in the cases. There's a tone to it of sincerity, a tone of guilelessness and humility and earnestness that, and a lack of Zen histrionics, a lack of growling bears demonstrating their realization that many of the cases actually have, you know, where there's this tune of testing and the student having to rise to the occasion of being tested. And I think that this case is a really dramatic shift in tone from many of the cases in the koan literature. And so, in fact, I love this case so much that my Shuso ceremony was supposed to kind of use the Bodhidharma's emptiness koan. You know, and I don't know, I don't have to go into detail, but that's the class, that's like the first or second case in the book. And traditionally, that's the case that the student uses for the Shuso ceremony. But I persuaded the abbess to let me depart from tradition and use this case, because it's sometimes done. Sometimes students are permitted to do that. This is case 15. Yangshan plants his hoe. Before I proceed, let me just maybe reiterate. The only reason for me to speak is to try to express appreciation for our practice. Not to give you anything that you don't have. So that's what I would like to do. I'd like to express my appreciation for our practice and speak to what that means, speak to gratitude, and speak to how to bear with one another. Those are the two themes that I have some vague notion of speaking to. So, case 15. The introduction goes, knowing before speech is called silent discourse. Spontaneous revelation without clarification is called hidden activity. Saluting in front of the gate, walking down the hallway, this has a reason. What about dancing in the garden or wagging the head out the back door? So, knowing before speech is called silent discourse. Show me the realization before the bear growls. Show me the realization you've always had. Just show me who you actually are. Don't put on a show. Don't prove anything. Just expose who you actually are, warts and all. That's spontaneous revelation without clarification, hidden activity. Formal practice, saluting in front of the gate, placing your hands, your palms together and bowing, placing your hands in shashu and walking down the hall mindfully, carefully, according to form. This has a reason. What about dancing in the garden or wagging the head out the back door? In other words, what is the spirit of putting the palms together and bowing? What is the spirit of embracing and sustaining all forms and rituals? That's one way of saying the fourth precept, verse 3 of the Refuges. And the first is sometimes avoid all evil. One way of saying that is embrace and sustain all forms and rituals. What is the spirit of the forms? What's the point? So anyway, that's my little commentary on the introduction. Here's the case. Guishan asked Yangshan, where are you coming from? Yangshan said, from the fields. Guishan said, how many people are there in the fields? Now, those of us familiar with Zen literature know that these questions, where are you coming from, how many people are in the fields, they're questions with an intent. The teacher is trying to see who's in front of them. And so the student may hear this as a challenging question. Oh, he wants me to show him my realization. You know. And so in many of the cases show that the student, you know, says something unconventional to what sounds like a conventional question, because this is kind of like the culture. So, Guishan asked Yangshan, where are you coming from? Yangshan said, from the fields. Guishan said, how many people are there in the fields? Yangshan planted his hoe in the ground. Planted his hoe in the ground, clasped his hands, and stood there. That was his response. He just stood in shashu, you know, put his tool in a certain place, and stood in shashu. Ah, so Guishan said, on South Mountain, there are a lot of people cutting thatch. Yangshan took up his hoe and went. Now, this case was my very first summer at Tassajara. Tenshin Rib Anderson presented this case in the Stone Management. And after stating the case, he asked for comments or questions. And I remember one student saying, Well, Yang Shan was cocky and arrogant, and so he was silent. Something of that nature. And then I said, you know, and I think Reb asked, what was this business about picking up his hoe, you know? And I said, he went to do the work of the moment. And Reb said, excuse me, would you say that again, please? I said, he went to go do the work of the moment. So I saw the case. I continued to see the case as a monk wants to practice. He wants to give himself. In this case, it's a man. In Tang Dynasty China, it's mostly guys that are talked about. This man wanted to give himself completely to practice. And so when the teacher asked this, show me your realization question, he said, I want to practice. I don't want to engage in talk about the way. I want to follow the way. So the teacher says, very good. We got some folks cutting thatch. You can practice away there. Cool. I'll go do it. That's the case. That is my firm conviction of what is happening in the case. And I think the commentary will bear this out. Let's listen to this. Listen to the tone of this commentary. And if you're familiar with some of the commentaries, you know, they're parsing it apart and all sorts of weird language is used. Well, strange language is used here too, but there is a different tone. So Wansong, the collector and commentator of these cases, says the following. Teacher and apprentice join ways. Father and son complement each other's actions. The family style of Gui and Yang is a guide for 1,000 ages. So that's his first words about the case. Teacher and apprentice join ways. Father and son complement each other's actions. The family style of Gui and Yang is a guide for 1,000 ages. So there's no dharma battle happening here. There's a harmonization, a singing of a song together, a celebration together. In case you can't tell, I really love this case. So here's some more stuff. You know, in this literature, Wansong compiles things that people have said about these famous cases. And so one teacher named Zhuanshao said, if I had seen him, I would have kicked over the hoe for him. You know, I would have put that cocky guy in his place, is basically what's being said here. And then Wansong says, I say, Zhuanshao can't control his zeal. Zhuanshao is getting carried away. You know, he's missing the point. He's overzealous and doesn't see what's happening. And in proof of what Wansong is proposing, he cites Chan Master Chosui, commenting on Zhuanshao's comment. It's kind of like the Talmud. You know, rabbis talking about what the other rabbi said about this rabbi. So Tozui says about Zhuanshao's wanting to kick over the hoe, few really understand the point of Gui Shan's questions. When Yang Shan answered him by planting the hoe, Buddhas and patriarchs disappeared. Now, in case you don't know, that's praise. That's a good thing, to make the Buddhas and patriarchs disappear. That's a good, good thing. That's about the highest praise you can give a practitioner. is that, you know, they made the Buddhists and patriarchs disappear. In other words, the Dharma was born right then and there. It started all over again right then and there. You know, the dusty lingering in the past was disappeared because it was renewed. It disappeared because it was renewed. If you save your life, you lose it. If you give your life away, you find it. Selflessness and gratitude are two sides of one coin. But the best thing you can do for yourself is give yourself fully away on each moment. So anyway, I digress. Few really understand the point of Weishan's questions. When Nanshan answered him by planting the hoe, Buddhas and patriarchs disappeared. Zhuangsha, kicking it over as a bystander, somebody not privy, not hip to what's going on, doesn't agree, to avoid the letting the blue, yellow, green deepen with spring. Do you feel the vibe of that? Few really understand the point of Guishan's questions. When Yangshan answered him by planting the hole, Buddhas and patriarchs disappeared. Zhuangsha, kicking it over as a bystander, doesn't get it. He hinders the blue, yellow, green deepening with the spring. He inhibits this fresh, sincere, guileless spirit. Just practice, that's all. You see that in this case. Just practice. Now, some more commentary. Meeting on a narrow road, escape is impossible. And this is Chan Master Ping of Falun Temple. He also misses the point, according to Wansong. Meeting on a narrow road, escape is impossible. Okay, these guys are meeting, so you can't run away from each other. That's a Zen kind of expression. When planting the hoe, standing with folded hands, having come across the bridge, he walks on the shore. So, Yangshan is stepping out of samsara into nirvana, out of suffering into realization, into peace. That's what this guy is saying. And by meeting Guishan, in this meeting, that's happening for him. So a realization is happening for him, is what Ping of Falun Temple is saying. For the first time, realizing his whole body is muddy and wet. So, meeting on a narrow road, escape is impossible. When planting the hole, standing with folded hands, having it come across the bridge, he walks on shore. For the first time, realizing his whole body is muddy and wet. So now he sees how he's been suffering. He sees how deluded he's been. He sees how ignorant he's been. And you know, he can see that now because in Guishan's presence, he's got clearer eyes. That's Chan Master Ping's interpretation. Wansong says, I say, not worth looking around in the light of the moon. So on one level, if it's true that that Yangshan's walking on the shore, he's not looking at mud and wetness. Mud and wetness doesn't matter. You know, delusion, realization disappears along with the Buddhists and patriarchs. You know, affliction and error and sin is gone along with the Buddhists and patriarchs. Not worth looking around at mud and wetness in the light of the moon. There's nothing to cling to, no fault to cling to, no attainment to cling to. There's just this. So Tan Tong is somebody that Wansong never says anything bad about. He seems to have a lot of respect for Master Tan Tong. He always includes Tan Tong's verses and then usually gives comments on the verses. Here's Tan Tong's verse. The old and light one's feelings are many. He thinks of his descendants. Now he repents of setting up a household. We must remember the saying about South Mountain, engraved on the bones, inscribed on the skin, together requiting the blessing. Now there's a lot there. And when I talk about, and I'll I think I'll have time to talk about how we can bear with one another. I want you to remember, I ask you to remember this thing engraved on the bones, inscribed on the skin, together requiting the blessings. Okay, so the old enlightened one's feelings are many. He thinks of his descendants. No. So the commentary kind of says that this, the old enlightened one probably means Buddha. At first you might think it's Wei Shan, and Wansong never says it's Buddha, but he implies that. I mean, he says at first you think it's Wei Shan, but when you look into it, you know it's not. So the Buddha looks back on his descendants, us, and our near neighbors in the Tang Dynasty. And as he's thinking of us, he repents of setting up a household. Why did I bother creating a monastic order and giving, you know, the Vinaya and the Four Noble Truths when some schmuck is going to put a poster up on his wall saying, show me the realization? I think that's kind of what he's getting at. That there's bound to be hubris, there's bound to be misunderstanding, there's bound to be vanity and things of that nature. And so, geez, man, they kind of seem to miss the point a lot. That, I think, is the point of the line, you know. He doesn't really repent of setting up the household, but he does kind of get a little perturbed at the direction that it sometimes takes. However, we must remember the saying of South Mountain. Engraved on the bones, inscribed on the skin, together requiting the blessings. We have the raw materials. It's in our DNA. It's in our hearts and minds now. So it's okay.
Wrong what?
Raw materials. Oh. It's in our hearts. Okay. And one last bit about the case, and then I'll say something else before I stop talking. So Wansong talks about something that Fadang said. Fadang said, the old peasants returned with bundles of firewood, urging their wives to spin through the night. See how busy they are at home, but tell me, by whom are they empowered? When you ask them, they don't know, and suddenly give rise to doubt and confusion. Ah, how many people, past or present, know the virtue of gratitude. So these old women are busy working, you know. Then you ask them, well, why are you doing it? You know, what's the point? You know, and then they get confused. You know. When reflecting on themselves, they get confused. When they're in the midst of doing it, they were fine. And I envision a monk, you know, just, you know, you can feel the energy of this, you know, this monk. And say she's at the dishes and she's just totally, totally doing it, you know. And when a practitioner is earnest and really taking the teaching at face value, you know, just when washing the pots, wash the pots. You know, when walking down the path, walk down the path. Burn yourself completely in your activity. A young beginner can do this. And you can sometimes feel it. But then you ask them to show me your realization, and they start to stutter, and they start looking at themselves, and they get confused. When they're forgetting about themselves and just doing it, there's no confusion. There's just joy. There's just gratitude. There's just this radiant quality. When you start to try to think about it, when you try to look around in the light of the moon, you get caught. You get stuck. When you're looking for some kind of attainment, some sort of progress, you lose your humble, sincere, guileless heart of practice. But when you just give yourself, you receive your life on each moment by giving your life selflessly, without greed, without thought of getting anywhere else. But we're such ingrates most of the time. You know, well, can I go someplace that has free Wi-Fi? This isn't quite good enough, you know. So Wansong asks, how is it after knowing the virtue of gratitude, cutting off an arm without feeling pain, standing in the snow without getting weary? This is why, since I've grown old, I have lived here in this temple of requiting blessings. Okay, I said I was going to talk about how to bear with one another, but before I do that, I do want to bring Suzuki Roshi into the room a little bit. This is a lecture entitled Zazen, Rituals and Precepts Cannot Be Separated, and just a few paragraphs of this. The practice of rituals is the practice of selflessness. First, you enter the room and you bow. In Japanese, we say gotai tochi. Gotai is our body, and tochi is to throw away. It means to throw away your physical and mental being. In short, to practice selflessness. We offer ourselves to Buddha. That is the practice of bowing. When you bow, you lift your hands. We lift Buddha's feet, which are on our palms, and you feel Buddha on your palms. So when you practice bowing, you have no idea of self. You give up everything. So actual feeling of rituals cannot be understood without observing them. When you observe them, you have the actual feeling of rituals. As long as you try to know what it means or why you do it, it is difficult to feel your actual being in this place. As long as you try to know what it means, when you try to look around in the light of the moon, when you start to try to reflect on it, you know, why are we doing it? It is difficult to feel your actual being in this place. There's the paradox. To feel your actual being, you give it away moment after moment after moment. If you hang on to it, you've got some ephemeral caricature of your actual being, not your actual being. To feel your actual being, you've got to give it up. Give it up, you feel it. Give it up, you feel it. Hang on to it, and you're creating a ghost, and you're living a ghostly life. So, how to get out of dualistic concepts? How to get out of dualistic concepts and fill our being with gratitude is the point of practice. How to get out of dualistic concepts and to fill our being with gratitude is the point of practice. And that's why Yangshan planted his hoe and stood there. He didn't want to show his realization. He wanted to express his gratitude. He wanted to find a way to practice. He came to practice. And so when Weishan said, there's people cutting thatch, there's a way. He picked up his hoe and went. There's absolutely nothing to be gained from doing this practice. And that's good news. It's very good news. One thing about being back at Green Gulch that I noticed right off the bat, a little realization, forgive me, but I think I had a little realization. not a growling bear realization, but a humbling, oh my goodness, That's my mind kind of realization. You know, I lived at Green Gulch for 10 years, 12 years, and then I left for 4 years and came back. Some of the people that were there when I left are still there now, and I would see them and I would notice certain patterns of thought in relationship to those people. And sometimes they were relatively benign, sometimes they were a little less than benign, shall we say. And the feeling, and this is 4 years later, the exact same pattern of thought. 4 years later. And it was like the feeling I had, oh my God, it's been my mind all along. You know? Oh, hey. You know, all the time I thought I was really right about those folks, but you know, 4 years have passed, it's the exact same samskara, it's the exact same thought. It was my mind all along. All this time it was my mind. It wasn't them, it was me. You know, it was that kind of feeling, you know? And, it's a very important point, because we're going to have those, we're going to see those, you know. And so I've been musing on this ever since that feeling. And, you know, what does this mean? How do I turn this and deepen the feeling, the realization, if I can call it that. That, you know, God damn, it's been my mind all along. So I thought about. What Ed Brown relates, he went into Suzuki Roshi one day and complained about the kitchen staff. Just, you know, endlessly. And Suzuki just sat there. You know, didn't call him on the carpet for it, didn't interrupt him, just kind of like patiently let him rant, you know. And then rang the bell to end the Dokusan, maybe. I wasn't there. And so, apparently as Ed was bowing, Suzuki Roshi said, if you want to see virtue, you have to have a calm mind. If you want to see virtue, you have to have a calm mind. And that was perplexing. Why did he say that to me? Then he thought about it longer. He says, yeah, he really does want to see virtue. But his opinions were getting in the way. And Suzuki Roshi also said in a lecture that we should have eyes to see one another's practice. We should have eyes to see one another's practice. This does not mean to criticize, though. Each one has their own flavor, and we should appreciate their own flavor. This is how to bear with one another. I chose the word bear deliberately. There's a William Blake poem. We are put on this earth a little space to learn to bear the beams of love. Now, another thing I noticed being back in Green Gulch is my tendency to be witty. You know, I worked in the kitchen for about a decade in various capacities, including, you know, Fukuten, Baker, Tenzo. And I really enjoy working in the kitchen. I enjoy being among young guest students and younger students. You know, they behave more like young Shan than people that have been practicing for 20 years. They tend to behave more like that. I just want to practice. But I also, feeling good about things, I sometimes just crack jokes a lot. To the extent that it can be an annoyance to more mature practitioners, you know, I'm violating the container, you know, cracking up during silent work time sometimes. And I did that, you know, and I would also, when people were going into, this is some true confessions time, you know, I'm really trying to reform, but one of the things that we used to do is people going into sashin, you know, I would go up to them and whistle some really annoying little term tune. Like, it's a world of laughter, a world of... Okay, go sit with that for a while. Because I knew, you know, you hear that and it tends to like rattle in your brain a little bit when you're just sitting. I came back to Green Gulch and wanting to renew my heart of practice. And I still feel this impulse sometimes. You know, a situation will present itself and this is so ripe for a joke. How can I not tell a joke here? You know? And I've been reflecting on that. Sometimes I've been practicing restraint. One time, the situation was just so wonderful because Hannah has this watch. And if you push a button, it will tell you the time, literally, speak out the time. It is 12:30, you know. And so we're bowing out, we're about to bow out, and Connor reaches down and pushes that button. And so the watch will speak the time. And Hannah's visibly annoyed, says something. And he said, I wanted to know what time it was. He says, well, you could have looked at it. You didn't have to, you know, make it speak it. And I said, Connor, are you pushing Hannah's buttons? And it was this, no, the cosmos was asking me to tell that joke, you know. But I have been practicing some restraint, and I have been reflecting upon that guy who would behave that way. And what's behind that behavior? And I think what's behind it for me is not feeling worthy enough to rest at ease in the heart of practice. So I have to now and then trivialize it a little bit. And so it comes out like that. So beneath that behavior is sincerity trying to find a way out through their karma. Now, an uptight anal Zen student is trying to be good enough with all their being to actually receive, you know, they're not good enough yet. And if they keep trying, eventually they're going to be good enough to get the Dharma. There's sincerity trying to find a way out through karma. That sincerity is so beautiful. It's hard to gaze at without, you know, it's kind of like Moses coming down from talking to God. Oh, I can't take it. It takes a lot to look at each other that fully and see the virtue underneath the pain. It's right here, right now, always. And it's not like we can, and it's not separate from the pain. That's, you know, samsara is not separate from nirvana, you know, that classic teaching. It's not like there's some other being that is different from our scars and our wounds that karma manifests. No, it's the same being. And that's partially why it's hard to bear. So when we encounter one another and we see arrogance, we see vanity, we see frivolousness, we're seeing our own mind, right? That's kind of like a fact. Suzuki Roshi said that if you see somebody and their practice moves you, you know, the way that they practice, their heart of practice, how it manifests in their body maybe, and you're impressed, you're moved, you're inspired by that. He says, you're seeing your own mind. I say, if you see somebody and you see arrogance, you see vanity, you see frivolousness, you can't be seeing anything else but your own mind. You really can't. And think about, you know, your own mind, your own Laya Vijnana has found some seeds to vibrate. You know, there's something within your own arrogance, your own possibility for arrogance is starting to vibrate. You attribute it to something out there, but it's vibrating inside you. Mm-hmm. Now, given that, you know, that's karma. And vow is choosing what kind of vibration we want to emit. You want to see Buddha? Vibrate Buddha. See Buddha in all beings, and then your own Buddhahood will start to vibrate. You know, see sincerity. See gratitude. Trying to find a way through each and every being you encounter. And then your own sincerity will have a way out. Your own Buddha will have a chance to blossom if you can find a way to see Buddha in other beings. It's the only way to awaken your Buddha. Go looking like this for Buddha, you know, it ain't going to happen. You know, it takes two to tango. Only a Buddha and a Buddha, Dogen said. Mm-hmm. So look for Buddha. You know, look for Buddha in other beings, and then there's a chance your own Buddha will start to vibrate. Okay? I think you can get that done before next month. assuming that I'm giving myself an hour to talk, or an hour for the Dharma talk time, we've got 3.4 minutes to take questions or comments.
Just when you presented the bear, the poster of the bear,
yeah.
I just wanted to tell you my initial reaction,
yeah.
Which is that the growling bear, mm-hmm. bears growl. That's the mm-hmm. way they are. That's yeah. the realization. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like kind of a joke, like, okay, not showing yours,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
rather than histrionics.
Yeah, yeah. mm-hmm.
I was building a fire yesterday, and I came across Brother Stendhal Rast, and it was in the Chronicle, and it was about, well, basically, gratitude is good for you. And this whole thing, of course, scientifically, it's good for you and all this stuff. But he was it was an announcement of his talk that was happening. And then I looked at the date, it was in 2012. Mm-hmm. And but I love the synchronicity. My brain likes all this synchronicity. You mm-hmm. talked about gratitude. Yeah, mm-hmm. I cut that thing out. Yeah. So
I thank you so much for your talk and the making people laugh during sesshin. The first sesshin that I ever sat, which is like 16 hours of sitting all day for mm-hmm. 7 days. And I kept getting moved because it was full, and mm-hmm. depending on who was working, it keep moving my spot, you know, where I sat. And that was when I first met Eva, and she and I loved it. You'd have your meals in the meditation hall, right? Mm-hmm. And she wrote on the napkin, she drew a picture of the devil and put it under the cup. Oh, it was tea time. Mm-hmm. Of this really young kid next to her, and he couldn't stop laughing. Mm-hmm. And then, like a ripple, everyone, including Linda Ruth, started laughing, and it was just as suddenly the meditation all went from total silence and mm-hmm. seriously. So I don't know what you said about what was underlying your mm-hmm. liking to make jokes or sing mm-hmm. to get people to giggle and stuff. Mm-hmm. It seemed a little harsh. I think it's just, you know, you were being playful. Mm-hmm. But not all the time.
I had an impression listening. The opening story is, as you put it, very simple, very sincere, mm-hmm. and you sort of immediately get it. And then you go over commentaries, and then commentaries on commentaries, and mm-hmm. poetry, and commentary on poetry. And so I'm just watching myself take this in, and I'm seeing irritation. Like, why do we have to go through this? Mm-hmm. You know, it started off simple, and now it's so complex, and I'm losing the simplicity. Mm-hmm. And I want to get back to simplicity. But because I'm trying to sort of... So I see that in myself, and then I sort of have a ha-ha impression at the very end, like, maybe I don't even get what simplicity is. Mm-hmm. Maybe at first, when I heard the story, I had an idea, like I've had 1,000 times before. This is simplicity.
Yeah.
I get it. Mm-hmm. Let's move on.
Yeah.
And then I realized that maybe one of the many thousands of points is that if you really stay with it and stay with it and stay with it and see it and turn it around and mm-hmm. turn it around, mm-hmm. I really don't even know the simple fact of simplicity.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, and that's how a koan, and I've worked with koans before, that's how it sort of yeah. works its way in you.
It's yeah,
sort of,
so. Yeah, I think there's something there. Because, you know, another case I was talking about is Bison Plants the Fields. Commentary. Commentary says, you know, planting the fields, making rice, ordinary household matters. only those who have investigated to the full know their import. And Suzuki Roshi says, you know, our practice is simple. It's very quite simple. Usually when something's simple, we say, oh, I know that, it's simple. But unless its value is discovered, it's the same as not knowing. So yeah, it's very, very simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy. And you know, we dance, we're kind of like trying to figure out how to let go enough to rest there.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Shujo Muhen Seigando Bono Mujin Seigandan Om Ryo Seigangaku Busuro Mujo Seiganjo. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.